Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm Adam Ferenc, and I'm joined tonight by Alan Bryan and Aaron White. We may or may not get Carl Kafer in a little bit, but tonight our topic is the legendary CBS Saturday Night lineup of the 70s, and a look at how it has since created a legacy of appointment television across the dial. So, Alan, say hello.
Hello.
And Aaron, say hi.
Hi.
Okay, so I first want to, before we get into specific shows or lineups, when you guys think of appointment television, what comes to mind? What do you first think of when that term is used? So let's start with you, Alan.
Well, depends on what era it was. You know, when you were a kid, there was certain shows that you had to watch because everybody watched them. And then, you know, when you get older, it's more of the, you got into more of the drama thing where you had to watch Magnum P.I. or ER or something, or St. Elsewhere. St. Elsewhere is a better example. You know, or in the 70s, everybody watched Emergency and Chips and, you know, and they had a little comedy in Emergency and Chips, but it was mostly drama, you know. And those kind of shows were appointment TV when you were a kid because you knew everybody would say, "Hey, did you see Pancho ride his cycle and that near car crash on Saturday?" And you know, you'd have to talk about it.
Yeah.
So.
And so I'll pose the same question to you, Aaron. What about you? What comes to mind when you think of that term?
Well, as a child of the 90s, I have to go to my first introduction to live-action television, which was the TGIF lineup on ABC Friday nights. It was the only night of the week I was allowed to stay up till 10 o'clock, and I watched the whole block week after week, and that's where it was at for me. And it's still a touchstone for pop culture references in my playbook.
Fair enough. So specifically tonight, we're going to start with that CBS Saturday Night lineup. Now, from the 73-74 season through the 74-75 season on CBS, we had All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, The Bob Newhart Show, and then Carol Burnett. And for mid-season of 74-75, the Jeffersons briefly slotted in where MASH had normally been, while MASH went to, I believe, Mondays or Tuesdays for that season to give the Jeffersons a chance to shine. And, you know, when you really think about it, these are all, you know, like top 100, top 150 shows in terms of quality and legacy. So that's just an extraordinary, extraordinary lineup when you think about it. And I don't know, and maybe we can get into this a little later, but I don't know if there's really been a better lineup, comedy or otherwise, just in terms of overall consistent quality and cultural impact than that lineup. So I'll ask you, Aaron, can you think of a lineup other than the TGIF that had a personal impact on you, one that you would think of that could maybe go toe-to-toe with that just in terms of cultural impact, fame, and popularity?
Sure. I'm blanking on the exact dates. So 2010 to 2015-ish, NBC Thursday nights had possibly the only comedy lineup that could rival that, as they offered for, I believe, five seasons. The Office, 30 Rock, Parks and Recreation, and Community, which are also, in my estimation, all-time sitcoms.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of two of those, and I need to go back and give two more a real look. But yeah, that's a fair assessment. And don't forget that despite the fact that it was I think by that time ER was off the air, but I'm sure that NBC had some huge drama that night to cap it off. So, Alan, I'll ask you the same question. Is there anything that you can think of, another lineup that may rival that lineup from the 70s?
I know there is, and for me personally, it probably is, but maybe not to others, you know. Due to circumstances beyond my control, I haven't done my homework for the other nights. So we were focusing on Saturday primarily, so I'm a little off here. I want to say NBC at one point had a good lineup on a Saturday with the Profiler and what was that guy that changed his identity every week? Not the imposter, but
the pretender.
Pretender. Yeah, and then I think they might have had another show. Now Fox, in a different way, for years, had a killer Sunday night lineup, because you had now they only had 2 hours, not three, but they had Married with Children, The Simpsons, and The X Files. Oh yeah.
That was a monster.
For the first 5 years, I think, of The X Files, and you had those two shows to lead in, even though maybe Married with Children was near the its end, but The Simpsons, and well, is it just 2 hours or was it three? Because I guess it was more than that. But
it was three hours. But not a lot of people remember that 10 o'clock show. And I remember that X-Files started out on Fridays paired with the one and only season of Briscoe County Jr. And then I think it moved to Sundays during its fourth season. But, you're not wrong. That was a heck of a lineup.
There was a time, though, when the Fox Sunday night lineup, and it wasn't football preempting things, was such a killer. You had Cops, I guess. You had Cops? Wait. At one point there was Cops and...
Yeah, Cops was always on like 7:30.
Was it Cops and America's Most... An hour of Cops, America's Most Wanted, then was it X-Files? Or was that Saturday?
No, X-Files was on Fridays at 9, and then it moved to Sundays at 9.
I'm talking about when they moved to the Sunday. But Saturday night, too.
Cops often played after X-Files.
Yeah, but Saturday night, Fox had an hour of Cops and America's Most Wanted, which was very hot for a bit, to me, because that was appointment television. I did not miss Cops. I did not miss America's Most Wanted. And on Sundays, I had Remember Children, Simpsons, X-Files for about 5 or 6 years. So, I had my – that to me, the Fox was really a big thing for a couple of years for me in the TV lineups.
Well, doing a little bit of research, I found one of the Fox Sunday lineups. And for the 2000 to 2001 season, Fox's lineup was Futurama, King of the Hill, The Simpsons, Malcolm in the Middle, and then The X-Files.
That's it. There you go. Thank you.
And what's really unique about that lineup is that it's a solid, 2 hours of comedy programming, followed by one of the great SF shows of all time. And so it really gave X-Files an extra punch because it's coming out of nowhere.
And the other thing is you have three of the great animated shows of all time, too, because I'm
very
sorry,
true.
But King of the Hill is vastly undervalued these days.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and of course, people also talk about the 84-85 and 85-86 NBC Thursday lineup, and that's The Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, and Night Court. But people forget, you know, they say, well, that's a great comedy lineup, but it's only 2 hours. Well, the thing is, there was an hour-long drama at the end of the evening, and that was Hill Street Blues.
Oh, yeah. I'd rather watch that than the other stuff.
Yep. And, you know, you can go through just so many. I mean, now here's one that I know you'd like, and I saw it and had to bring it up, so I put it in my notes, and that's the 90-91 Fox Sundays from 7:30 onward was Parker Lewis Can't Lose, In Living Color, Get a Life, and Married with Children. So I know that you like
there
at
you
least
do.
Two of those, Alan.
No, I like.
I was actually going to.
I like all of those. I liked all of those, especially Parker Lewis Can't Lose. I got a DVD, and Married Children. I got the whole series too. So,
yep.
No, all those are in right. And In Living Color, you, except for not being a big fan of Jim Carrey, In Living Color, you had to know, you had to watch that so you go to work the next day, you know, and talk about two snaps up for that film and all that stuff.
Yep. Now, Aaron, you had something to add?
And that lineup stayed consistent with In Living Color and Married with Children. Just a couple years later, they were anchored by the Ben Stiller Show and Rock. But with still with Married with Children and In Living Color.
Absolutely.
So Fox was really bringing it on Sunday nights for a long time.
Fox had a lot of good stuff on Saturdays. Well, Saturday, for me, just Cops and America's Most Wanted was, I know, they're not real, it's not normal programming, you know, like a comedy or a science fiction show, but I enjoyed those shows. I still watch reruns of Cops. And I miss America's Most Wanted like crazy. I mean, you bring it back now, and a certain person with orange skin would be in the top 10 every night. Most of the time. Be on the lookout for this man using too much bronzer.
Misses the eyes.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Hey, you know, we're all friends here, but no, now I can't remember the exact, and I thought that I'd written it down in my notes, but you know, HBO, at various times, on Sundays for a couple of years there, threw out lineups that included, and this, of course, like I said, is in various formations, but The Wire, Big Love, 6 Feet Under, The Sopranos, Deadwood, and Rome. Plus, I think they also had the later seasons of Oz, and occasionally some of their late night programming. So, you know, HBO in the early to mid 2000s had some pretty powerful lineups as well.
While they were reshaping television. And when you have to seriously question whether Big Love or Rome is the weakest series in that bunch, that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, especially when Big Love in its first three seasons was so good, because I really think it fell off in the final two seasons.
It dropped.
But Rome, you know, Rome, I think, and we can talk about this another time, or maybe we can talk about it tonight. Now, I'm going to, before I get into this, I know you've seen it, Aaron. Now, Alan, did you ever see Rome?
Never.
Well, I'm just going to get into it a little bit, because I don't want to spoil it too much, because it's really a show that needs to be experienced. But it's a real shame to me that show didn't go on more, because they had thought that it was going to take about 4 or 5 seasons to tell the story they wanted to tell. And then HBO and the BBC, who was a co-producer with HBO on that series, they got cold feet because of how expensive it was. I think the show cost something like $10 or $12 million an episode, and it was getting ratings pretty much as small as The Wire, and you need a microscope to find some of those numbers. And so what they did is, I think they were 3 episodes into shooting the second season, and they told the producers, we're pulling the plug, and the producers got together with the writers, and they collapsed basically the next 2.5 seasons of story into about 7 or 8 episodes. And it seems like you'd get something totally messy, but the result was what I think makes Rome one of the most special series ever. But since you've seen it, what do you think, Aaron?
I actually haven't seen it. It's been a show I've been in. It's been on my Prime watch list for about 2 years now, and I just haven't gotten to it.
For some reason, I thought that you said you'd finally watched it and liked it. Maybe it was just that you saw the trailer and thought it was something you'd like.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, I highly recommend it. Just an amazing show that's got a fantastic cast. Ciarán Hinds as Julius Caesar was phenomenal. The women in the show were terrific. Bunch of great.
Didn't Kevin McKidd get his start there?
Kevin McKidd, Ray Stevenson, they were there. Now, Kevin McKidd had done some work with Mike Leigh and a couple other British directors, and there were actually a lot of British directors on the show. I believe Michael Apted.
He has 3 or 4 episodes that he did.
Including the first 2 episodes. But that's a show that I have a lot of love for. So I highly recommend it to the listeners. So getting back to the original lineup that we were talking about, of that 70s lineup, do we all have a favorite show?
Wow. I'm going to say, at the time, depending on which season it was MASH. It was probably my favorite. Because when Frank Burns was getting humiliated every night, every Saturday night, that was the best for me. After Frank left, then I'd probably have to go with Carol Burnett, believe it or not.
Well, you know, after all, and anybody that can find something just hanging in the window and turn it into that dress.
I guess I would have to go with All in the Family. It's classic cultural sitcom, a lot of sight gags, but a lot of really potent political messages that are scarily in vogue again. And perhaps that's why it's sticking out to me at the moment, but that's the one that's sticking out to me.
Yeah, those are the two that I'd go with. Now, I have a lot of appreciation and respect for the other shows, particularly the Carol Burnett Show, and I'm not a sketch comedy aficionado. It doesn't always work for me, but that was just a brilliant show. But I would have to say that, yeah, for me, depending on the season, it's MASH or All in the Family. So I will say that with MASH, some of my favorite characters were in the later seasons. I actually liked Colonel Potter a lot, and I actually really liked Winchester. But I do think that the show definitely changed its tone in its later seasons, and it wasn't as outright funny. I mean, granted, you know, war isn't supposed to be funny, but it was the series was supposed to be a comedy, and it became a bit maudlin at times, and I think that's the best word to use for MASH. Now, I still consider MASH an all-time great series, but All in the Family probably to me, and it's sad to say, but like you said, Aaron, it's remained vital. It has things that are still relevant today, and that's a sad indictment on our world, I think.
Absolutely.
So out of all of these lineups that we've been looking at, is there a lineup? And I know you guys were looking at some of them. Was there one that you maybe found and said, "Wait, how can anybody have ever thought that was a great set of shows?" Was there one that maybe made you scratch your head and go, "My tastes have changed"?
Well, I never liked any. You know, when they had the Cosby lineup in the late 90s, you know, when Cosby was the Thursday night thing, I guess.
Yeah, the late
80s, still,
yeah.
I didn't like the show then, and now it doesn't hold up because of things, the events that have happened since, but I didn't like him then, and I didn't like anything on NBC. And I'll tell you a bigger reason why I didn't like Cosby is because it was opposite The Flash, and that was, you know, the other Flash kids back when there was a, you know, when a different guy played him.
Yeah, John Wesley Shipp.
Yeah, got to dress
the real
audience,
Flash.
You know. Yeah.
CBS Friday, late 70s, early 80s. The Incredible Hulk, Dukes of Hazzard, and Dallas.
Ugh.
Considered an all-time lineup.
I hate all three shows. Thank you.
Well, you know, I have some fondness for aspects of the Incredible Hulk, but you know,
I think that
Larry Hagman was definitely good in Dallas, but and you know, of course, I think every red-blooded American boy back in the day probably liked Daisy and some of the girls too, but Dukes of Hazzard has got to be one of the worst shows I've ever seen.
I want to say this. Okay, I've never seen an episode of Dallas. Okay, never saw it because it just never appealed to me. I the opening credits would start and I'd run the other way or something. Even the Who Shot JR reveal, somebody brought a TV into work. I was working in a fast food joint. Somebody brought one in the back to try to watch. I don't know how they were going to do this, but you know, I thought that was the stupidest thing I'd ever seen anybody do. Now, Incredible Hulk, I watched a couple episodes, but I didn't like it because it just wasn't very comic booky to me. You know, it was just so. It was worse than $6 Million Man. You know, come on. It just didn't. But
it was a very somber show. And, I mean, you know, of course, that end theme was called, I think, The Lonely Man or something.
But you have to remember, I was a comic book reader since age 6. I discovered Spider-Man at age 7 and the Hulk and all the others. So when the Spider-Man and Hulk TV shows came on, I watched the first episodes of both. The Spider-Man one was bad, and everybody knows it was bad, and it was canceled pretty dang fast. I don't know how the Hulk stayed on for the 3 or 4 or whatever years. I thought it was horrible, and then was brought back in movies on NBC. That was bad. Now, as far as Dukes of Hazzard, here's how I got to watch some of that. When I went back, by the time I was living with my foster parents the second time around, I had left for a couple of years. We were babysitting. Yep. My mom was a licensed sitter, and Dukes was coming. I don't remember. I guess it was – I don't know if Dukes was still on or if it was reruns on another channel. But whenever the Duke boys would come on TV and these 2 6-year-olds wanted to watch Dukes of Hazzard, so I'd watch it with them. That's the only way I've ever seen any episodes of Dukes of Hazzard, without being tied down somewhere. And it was, you know, I'd be reading a book and paying half attention, but it was pretty bad show. Come on.
The odd man out for me in that lineup too, because Dallas is a straight soap, and The Incredible Hulk, while with all of its comic book guys, is more or less a soap opera for men. And then there's Dukes of Hazzard, which is just a straight, episodic, not quite sitcom, but not quite a drama, about two good old boys with a really crappy car with a crappier symbol on top.
Yeah, really. Did they ever have jobs?
Oh, weren't they moonshiners?
Just now occurred to me. I don't have any idea how they made money.
They were moonshiners.
Really, Uncle Jesse was a moonshiner?
I think they were moonshiners or something. It was never really said, but they were described as a quote couple of good old boys. And that meant they did whatever they needed to do.
I get that, but it's just funny.
And I always assumed based on stuff that I saw on the show, and I never watched the show real close because I hated it so much, but I always got the impression they were like moonshiners or car thieves or something, but yeah.
I don't know what they were, but it just now occurred to me. I couldn't remember them ever going. It's not like they went to a 9-to-5 job. Uncle Jesse had a farm, right? Did he have a farm?
Probably.
I'm sorry. I hate to throw that out there. It's just something that, you know, and after all these years of watching the show, I can't remember the life of me. It just now occurred to me that I'd like to know what they did for a living. But, you know, who knows? Okay, back to whatever.
Now trying to come up with a different lineup. Now, I'm not a big fan of some of these shows. But NBC in 94 and 95 had a lineup that had Mad About You, Friends, Seinfeld, and ER.
Yeah, that's another monster one as far as cultural relevance goes.
Yeah.
And the only show I watched out of all of those was Seinfeld. I hated every other show in that lineup.
See, now, I liked ER. I liked Seinfeld, really loved Seinfeld. Mad About You, I saw a couple episodes here and there, and, you know, it just, it never really clicked with me, but I guess that it has its audience. And Friends, obviously that connected with a generation of people, But I've never been able to sit down and enjoy an episode. As part of my 300 project for my book that I'm writing on the top 300 programs from around the world, I sat down, I think it was about a year and a half ago, and I watched the first episode of Friends, and I felt no compulsion to keep going forward with it. I may go back and try another episode at some point just to see if I was in a mood, but I doubt it, because for me it just was not my
thing.
Well,
and Friends, I believe, is technically a Mad About You spinoff. It's a really, like, sketchy spinoff, but the character Phoebe Buffay on Friends, her sister, who is occasionally in Friends, was a character on Mad About You. And the Mad About You cast would occasionally show up at the coffee house that they always drank coffee at.
Seems to me. Okay.
Interesting. Well, you know, for me, the two most relevant shows are Seinfeld and ER, and especially Seinfeld, which I think is pretty much the best sitcom ever made.
I liked ER for about 2 or 3 years, but after that, it was hit and miss with me. Seinfeld, I loved from day one, but I've seen less than 4 episodes of Friends, maybe 4, maybe less. And Mad About You, I hated, because Paul Reiser, never liked Paul Reiser. And he was doing those horrible commercials for long distance service for AT&T. And then he was the bad guy in Aliens. So I had 3 reasons to hate him. His stand-up stunk. He was the bad guy in Aliens, and he did horrible commercials. See? So I was mad at Paul Reiser, not mad at, and I didn't think Helen Hunt was very good at anything.
I've never gotten the appeal of Helen Hunt. When she won lead actress for
As Good as It Gets,
I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
Especially over Judi Dench in Mrs. Brown. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. There's stuff that's confusing. I know. Okay, we can't have dead air now.
my phone clicked for a second. So now, Aaron, your choice of this special lineup. Do you have favorites of that?
Well, Community is definitely my go-to in that lineup. But I did love every single show in there. I guess if I'm ranking them, I'd go with Community top, and then everything after the first season of Parks and Recreation and everything in the first 5 seasons of 30 Rock would be tied. And then The Office, and then the last few seasons of 30 Rock, and then the first season of Parks and Recreation, which was horrible.
No, for me, Community and Community and 30 Rock are the two that I really, really love out of that lineup. I've only seen that first supposedly awful season of Parks and Rec, and I will say that it's not enough to make me eager to see the second season. And
I will remind you that this is and now I'm going to blank on his name. The man who created The Good Place also created Parks and Recreation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and that was also kind of a I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead.
That was also kind of a star-making cast. I mean, Amy Poehler obviously was a superstar from Saturday Night Live at that point. But
yep.
Chris Pratt was making a huge comeback after dropping off the map after Teen Soap Everwood. Aziz Ansari was put on the map with it. Aubrey Plaza was put on the map with it. So it was a show that really launched some really famous names at this point.
Wasn't John Krasinski in that too?
He was in The Office.
Oh, he was in The Office. That's
which,
right.
Yeah, had some star-making qualities, but for the most part was viewed as an ensemble piece led by Steve Carell.
Yeah, and I have to say that The Office, neither version works for me. But again, it's a show where I think I'm going to have to come back to it with some distance and give it another shot. And I'm probably, since I'm currently searching around for another sitcom to watch, because I like to have a sitcom to go through and a drama to go through as part of my project. And I'm thinking I might give Parks and Rec a look. I was thinking about giving Girls a look, but after that first episode, yeah, I'm not sure I'm in the mood for that.
I got to throw out a lineup here that was not a full season, but when it started, it was killer. And Thursday nights in 66 to 67, a Batman had premiered the previous spring. But Batman was on Wednesday and Thursday. So Thursday night, in the Thursday night, you had Batman, which had started the previous spring, and then you had F Troop, which was in its second season, and then Bewitched had moved to 8:30. Now there was an extra half hour prime time back then in the 60s. That's another story. And then Bewitched came after F Troop. Then you had That Girl. Now, briefly, had Love on a Rooftop, but then you had That Girl come after Bewitched. Those four in a row, Batman, F Troop, Bewitched, That Girl. I'm sorry, that all four, the four in a row to me was great programming, and that really was a Thursday night that I did not want to change the channel. Just saying. So I'm going to throw that out there. And I don't know if that's appointment TV, but if you were 7 years old, you were going to be watching Batman. You were going to watch F-Trick because it was funny. And then you were probably going to watch Bewitched because even if you were seven, Samantha was hot. And then you were going to watch Marlo Thomas because she was hot. You know? So, yeah, that's all there, you know?
Now this is going to be a little bit before. This is going to be actually exactly at your time, Aaron. But it's not exactly a single night lineup. But maybe you remember this, Alan. Do you remember when NBC in the 87-88 season attempted to do what they called Primetime Begins at 7:30, and they went and bought the syndicated rights to a bunch of sitcoms to air at 7:30 every weeknight?
No, I don't remember that at all. So what year was that?
87-88, and probably the most well-known series was She's the Sheriff.
I remember She's the Sheriff. Because I was working second and third shifts at the time, never got to watch much of that at all. Anything that I would have watched or had to watch, hopefully I was hoping my roommate was taping it on the VCR. If we liked the same shows, I was in the Air Force. I couldn't, it's not like I.
I had a job. I worked second, and I went second shift, and then I had a second job. So, you know, I didn't get to watch a lot of TV some years.
I want to bring up what ABC is currently trying to do on Thursday nights, which is trying to force appointment TV. First of all, they recycled the moniker TGIF and made it TGIT. And then they threw out three primetime soaps in a row, and they had Grey's Anatomy spinoff Station 19 at 8, then Grey's Anatomy at 9, and I think it's called A Million Little Things at 10, and it's just a bunch of weepies all in a row.
That sounds really terrible.
Full disclosure, folks, I stopped watching network TV in 2014, so I have no idea what's on TV anymore. My TV watching was primarily the 60s and 70s and 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like you once told me, Alan, by the time you found out that Luke and Laura had gotten married, they'd already been divorced.
Well, that's because I was in Japan. It wasn't the case. I was in Japan watching General Hospital for 2 years, and we were 6 months behind.
Yes.
So, seriously, from at 5 o'clock every weekday, you'd go in the break room, you'd watch General Hospital if you could, because if you couldn't, you'd have to catch it at 5 a.m., depending what shift you were on, and the break room would be full. But you'd be watching a Christmas episode in June or July because Armed Forces Network got the episode 6 months late. You could always cheat by reading Soap Opera Digest you got at the PX.
Yeah.
Like some people might have done. Actually, I got it because I knew I was going back to America. I started reading Soap Opera Digest to catch up so I'd know what was going on when I got back. Because I was suddenly going to be 6 months in the future, and I might miss every. I might, you know, that's going to be confused. Yeah, well, you were going to be 6 months in the future. You wouldn't know what you wouldn't see 6 months worth of episodes.
No, you pretty much wouldn't.
Yeah. So there was a, but there was a time when you had to, you just had to sacrifice. I remember too, on Sundays there was a time when Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea came on at 7 o'clock and the FBI followed, and then the ABC would have a Sunday night movie, and that would be killer. But because I liked watching Voyage and FBI back then, in the latter part of the '60s, we never missed Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. No way. Even when it got the Monster of the Week, you were still watching that. Well, it was a Star Trek. That was a Star Trek before Star Trek. You know, you were underwater, but you were still in a cool submarine.
Yep. Now, we've been talking about these shows since that that, but you bring up a good point. I mean, it's not like that 70s lineup on CBS for a few seasons was the only great lineup or the first one, because there were ones before that. You had what was in my notes? In the 53-54 season on CBS, you had George Burns and Gracie Allen, Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, I Love Lucy, and the Red Buttons Show. And then
yeah.
In 62-63, you had The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, The Beverly Hillbillies, and The Dick Van Dyke Show. Now, I'm not a Beverly Hillbillies fan, but the other shows, yeah. And I know people like to knock Dobie Gillis, but hey, any show with Maynard Krebs is not a bad show.
I can tell you another night that was appointment for me in the '60s was
is 69 to 70, because you had Glenn Campbell, his show, and then what that later morphed into Hee Haw in its first year. So, and then you had Beverly Hillbillies at 8:30. You had Medical Center, which I loved to watch. I know I was only 9 years old, but I did not miss Medical Center. Then you had Hawaii 5-0.
Dun, 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 dun.
And boy, you did, and when that was the first year for Hawaii 5-0, I think, was 69, and you did not miss that show.
No.
And everybody the next day would, if they got to stay up. I didn't have a bedtime. I didn't have a bedtime as a kid. So I was blessed. And I'm telling you right now, you know, I got to see they were 9 o'clock shows in the Chicago area. You know, I got to see those, and then I watched the news with my grandfather, and after Faye Flynn said goodnight, you know, and then I go to bed at 10:30 or 11. So, you know. That's how I became a night owl, because as a kid, I got to stay up late all the time. You joke, but that's how it worked.
Hey,
I was treated very nicely. I had problems with my stepdad later on, but in those first 10 years, I had it made when it came to watching TV. So I pretty much got my choice.
You had mentioned Mass moving off of Saturday to accommodate the Jeffersons spinning off of All in the Family.
Yep.
That mid-season Tuesday night lineup was the Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner show, Good Times, Mass, and One Day at a Time. So it spun off into a pretty, pretty nice lineup as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we've mostly been talking about these primetime lineups, but I want to ask you guys if any of you guys remember, if either of you guys remember the Saturday morning cartoon lineups, or some of the stuff that you could find just after school let out during the weekdays.
Well, we had, when I was a kid, we had Channel 44 would run The Adventures of Superman with Speed Racer, I think he did an hour of each, and that was just amazing. It's not a, you know, and they had another show, and then Channel 32, 44 was kind of low rent, but 32 was a little above that, WFLD. 32 had BJ and the Dirty Dragon, which wasn't cartoons, but there were cartoons after that. Plus, they also showed some Japanese, not anime, but they didn't show Ultraman, but they showed Goldar, which was called Space Giants, I think. And so, you know, you got to see some cool stuff, but Saturday morning cartoons, sometimes you had to flip around because you'd have a good car, you'd have Bugs Bunny at 7, and you'd have something good over here on NBC at 8, and something good over here at NBC at 8:30. You know, there wasn't a consistently strong lineup sometimes, and that's what always bugged me.
Same Saturday morning cartoons, but flash forward to the early 90s, Fox, I want to say it started at 8, three shows in a row. They had the wonderful Batman, the animated series.
Absolutely.
Yes.
X-Men and Spider-Man, which all three of those are great, great animated series.
Well, when Batman debuted, it debuted in prime time. The animated series did. It did.
Maybe they were showing reruns.
Well, they debuted it in prime time and then moved it to the afternoon, like 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon.
Right. It debuted in prime time, but then it went to afternoons. But, yes, that Fox's afternoon lineup was pretty dang good. I'll give I will say that for sure.
Oh, yeah. And let's not forget that one of the shows for a couple of seasons there was a hot, and at least in my area it was on Fox. I think it was syndicated, but that was Disney's Gargoyles. Did either of you see Gargoyles?
I love Gargoyles. My wife and I love Gargoyles. I have the whole series on DVD. It was very hard to get the second half of season two because Disney.
You can only get it through like the Disney Club or something.
Yeah, I finally got it. So I got, you know, but we really, really, really liked Gargoyles and did not miss an episode. So
Neither did I. So, but Aaron, you had something to add to Gargoyles?
There were two other Saturday morning cartoons also on Fox that I swear I'm the only person who remembers, and it makes me question my sanity. One is called Street Sharks, and the other was called Biker Mice from Mars.
Biker Mice from Mars and Street Sharks were crazy because the Street Sharks were always playing hockey, and the Biker Mice were always chasing the rats.
Yeah, I remember those. TV aficionados like us remember such things. Yes.
Yep.
You know, and I'll tell you, sometimes perception changes. I think for 1 year there was a cartoon on NBC in the 60s called Cool McCool, which was a spy spoof thing. And I remember liking it as a kid. Later on, it comes out on DVD. And I get the DVD and I watch a couple episodes and I'm going like, this is crap. So, you know, not everything you remember is, you know, was always good, you know?
I think that sometimes things that are actually made for children, not for families, don't age well once you get past childhood. Bobby's World, the Howie Mandel show, has not aged well
right.
for me.
That was one that I devoured
as a child.
I will say this. I think that Gargoyles has aged well. I think Batman the Animated Series has aged well. In fact, I will go so far as to say that Batman the Animated Series remains my favorite superhero adaptation at any time in any medium.
Yes, I will go along with that.
I also think that Animaniacs, not all of Animaniacs, but a good portion of Animaniacs.
It was brilliant.
I think that Pinky and the Brain largely holds up. Pinky and the Brain, I think it's a funny show in terms of how it holds up because it did topical humor in a lot of ways just like Murphy Brown did. It was so of the moment, and yet the jokes when you watch episodes, they don't fall as flat now as the ones on Murphy Brown do. And I think that's really down to how brilliantly animated and voiced Pinky and the Brain was. Pinky and the Brain also has timeless things like the episode where Pinky and the Brain were the lab mice of an alchemist, and you see them escape from their cage, and they go across a shelf labeled rare and magical ingredients, and you see a bottle that says sum total Ishtar box office receipts, and there's two of them inside the bottle.
Right. I remember that.
I think they went past another one that said something like Michael Cimino's career, and there was nothing in the bottle at all.
You know, you might not think about it, but I went back and watched it a couple of years ago, and even Star Trek the Animated Series, which was done with the original cast, still held up pretty well, even with the limited animation and everything, because the scripts were very good, and they didn't play down to the audience.
That might have been the first primetime animated series to win an Emmy. I think that's what its big claim to fame is. But you know, it's actually a very good show. But here's another one. It's a Saturday morning cartoon. the Ghostbusters. I don't mean the one based on
the
old filmation with the ape, but I mean the original run of the real Ghostbusters with
classic
based on the movies. When Joe Straczynski from Babylon 5 was in charge of the scripts for those first two or three seasons before the network interfered and decided to turn it into a kid's show with Slimer hanging out with some kids in a sand pit somewhere, and the show just got, and Winston became the driver and nobody else was there, and Nadine became an idiot. And it was just bad, bad, bad. But those first few seasons, I think the first like 60 episodes or so that Straczynski was in charge of, those are special. You guys have seen those, right?
Hate them.
Really?
Sorry. Pass. Hard pass. Yeah, remember, I'm 20 years older than you. It just don't work for me. I'm not a big fan of Ghostbusters, the Bill Murray era of movie Ghostbusters to begin with. So I can't. I'm out.
Yeah.
I understand the draw, but I can't. You know, no.
No, now I'm not saying that I think it holds up nearly as well as the rest, but I think those early episodes, the Slimer stuff, gave me a headache when I was a kid. And I abandoned it like an episode or two into that run. But I still occasionally check out episodes on YouTube of the original run, mostly the stuff that Straczynski himself wrote. Those are the ones that tend to hold up the best. But since we've all seen Babylon 5, I think we can pretty much imagine why that would be with his writing behind it.
Yeah, I got to say, though, I know I'm not talking lineups, but I'm just going to talk, besides Batman, the other best cartoon, and yeah, I think it was better than Simpsons because of the character designs and the sound effects, when you think about it, the music, and that's Johnny Quest, still the best damn cartoon that wasn't Batman.
There you go.
You probably want to say no. It was the Simpsons. It was the Jetsons.
I actually don't think either the Simpsons, either the Jetsons or the Flintstones were all that good.
No, they weren't. I still don't understand why everyone says, "Oh, they're a copy of the Honeymooners." They're not. To me, they don't copy the Honeymooners. Yeah, except the fact that it's two couples. Yeah, I get that, but they don't. If Fred was a bus driver, Fred Flintstone was a bus driver, and Bart worked in the sewer, and they didn't have a kid, Jack Gleason didn't own a car. You know, I mean, it's not a copy of the Honeymooners to me. Yeah, it has similarities, but I want somebody who created the Flintstones to say, "We copied the Honeymooners." I just never saw it. I never saw it as a
No. But something has occurred to me over the years. I agree with you that the Flintstones didn't copy the Honeymooners, but I think that Dinosaurs took some cues from the Flintstones.
Yeah, I know. I will tell you, the only thing I ever saw that the Flintstones copied from the Honeymooners, the only thing that was directly copied was the lodge business. They had the water buffaloes on the Flintstones, and they had something else on the Honeymooners. That's about, and they wore crazy hats. Other than that,
the Order of the Magnificent Elks or something?
I don't remember. All I know is that's the only thing that I thought was. And back in the 50s and early 60s, every man went to a lodge meeting, had some stupid. My grandfather went to He went to the Illinois Order of Odd Fellows and some other lodge, BFW Lodge. The Illinois Order of Odd Fellows. To get into that lodge, you had to be born on an odd number day. Isn't that he told me, Robert, that's my first name, secret. you know, when you're old enough, you can join the Illinois Order of Odd Fellows. And I'm like, what do you guys even do? I still don't know what they did in those meetings.
Drank.
You know?
They drank.
I'm still.
They drank and shot pool and looked at early issues of Playboy.
I know they drank because I know my grandfather. That's the only time my grandfather ever came home drunk on occasion. Because we drank at the lodge meeting. I'm not kidding. The only time he ever drank was at those stupid lodge meetings. And of course, the lodge meetings had to be an odd number day. You didn't have it on the 22nd, it had to be on the 25th.
Well, you know, I think it was the first episode of Family Guy, or one of the first episodes, where Lois told Peter, "What did I tell you not to do, Peter? Not to go to the lodge. And what else did I tell you to do? Not to drink at the stag party. And what did you do? I went to the lodge. And what did you do? I drank at the stag party. And what did you do? I drank at the lodge." But that's all we do at the lodge. But that's all we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, by the way, another great lineup is Fox's animation domination with Family Guy, Simpsons. Right now it's American Dad. Sometimes it's Futurama, whether they're, you know, being made currently or not, since they go on like 7-year cancellation breaks every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced it's actually over. I don't think Matt Groening is either.
Well, you know, Matt Groening has said about Futurama that he and David Cohen have ideas if anyone wants to give them the money and the freedom, but that they're happy with where they left it. So I think that you're absolutely right that they're willing to go to it, but...
Yeah,
but that's the thing, for me, and that's a great show. That's a great show there. It's had three perfect endings. The ending for the Fox run was great. The last episode of the direct to DVD season was great. And as much as the Comedy Central seasons were up and down, that last episode is among the better episodes. Although I really do think that the episode where the professor builds the time machine that only goes forward is it still contains one of the greatest jokes in the history of Futurama, where the professor says, hold on, slow her down. He leans out the window and goes, "Damn, I meant to get Hitler and hit Eleanor Roosevelt by mistake. We're going to have to take her back around again."
Okay.
Oh, no, it was hilarious. And they have this little section where it plays a version of 25 in the year 2525 by Zager and Evans. It's a great show, but I would love to see it come back, but I don't think we ever will.
I had one clip on Family Guy that I still think is probably one of the best sequences I ever saw. I think it might have been a pre-credits thing, where Stewie rolls out of a cave on a tricycle, I guess, and takes out Osama bin Laden or something like that. It was just the funniest thing. I can't remember how it goes now, but I remember going, I got to watch that again. I think I rewound my DVR three times because that sequence was just so hilarious. And I'm like, Stewie rolls out of a cave and takes out Osama bin Laden. I mean, it was brilliant.
There's some stuff in that show
too.
That sometimes it's just so stupid that you can't believe you just saw it. Like this one where Brian is with the family at
the
fair.
Like,
And Stewie comes up and says, "Hey Brian, look what I have." And Brian goes, "What? Where'd you get that?" "I built him, and we just won a prize, top prize." "For what?" He's the world's most genetically perfect pig." "Oh my God," says Brian. "Show him, pig." And the pig proceeds to punch Brian after not making an oink sound, but saying oink. He looks like a bulldog crossed with a pig that's about the size of Clifford the Red Dog, and it only takes maybe 10 or 15 seconds for the whole sequence, and it's utterly stupid, and yet I can't stop laughing at it for some reason.
I hear you.
Yeah. Huh. It's like the first time Peter fell down and hurt his knee, and it took like 35 seconds for him to just hold his knee and go, ah.
Yeah.
Like, so, the first time they did that, I laughed so hard I cried, and then it's like, okay, we get it. Don't ever do it again. But they kept doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They tend to kill the joke by far too much repetition.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I stopped watching the show because endless scenes of vomiting or just some of the gags just started rubbing me the wrong way, and I just said I'm giving it up for my sanity.
Well, there's still the one on the spinoff, the Cleveland show, where Cleveland has gone off and he's working in this school, and he walks in and he says, "Oh my God, this school is more out of control than Amy Winehouse's hair." And what you see it does a Family Guy style cut to Amy Winehouse. She's bald and she's waiting up at night, and her hair comes in, and they have an argument, and the hair runs up the stairs, and after saying, "I hate you, I hate this house, I hate my life," runs up the stairs. Amy looks sad. The hair comes back down the stairs and says, "You know, I didn't really mean that." And Amy pats herself and says, I know. Come back to Mama." And the hair proceeds to jump under her dress. And then Amy says, "Now where's my head hair?"
Oh, my God. See, that's a favorite gag I have in The Simpsons is Trump's hair is really a small dog, you know, that settles on his head. I love that gag. You know, I don't watch The Simpsons, but when I see that clip of his hair being a small dog and it settles on his head, I just laugh. There was another one-time gag. I think they only did it one time in The Simpsons, maybe once, and it made me laugh so dang hard. Homer drives to work, then gets to the nuclear power plant, has to go to the back of the lot, parks at the back of the lot by the fence, gets out of the car, sees Bart in his backyard and says, "Hey, Bart, hey, Dad," and then walks into the nuclear power plant, you know, through the long, long parking lot. So, yeah. You know, the parking lot for the plant is on the other side of the fence in his backyard. I'm like, what? And that was a one-time, I don't think they ever said that again, but it was just so stupid, I couldn't resist the laughing. So, yep.
Yeah, so no, so do any of you guys, either of you guys have anything to add to the, you know, do we have anything that we really want to say about what these great lineups have meant to us other than giving us lots of memories, I mean, of great shows? What exactly do they mean to us?
Well, to me, the Saturday night lineup that we were talking about at the beginning, that was just, you know, it was all comedy. Well, MASH wasn't totally comedy, but it was 90% of it was comedy, I guess. And it was just a perfect Saturday night, and you laughed your butt off. You know, as far as then you switch over to my second favorite night, which had to be, you know, that Fox lineup that had Murder with Children and the X-Files. And, you know, you had great animation and some other stuff. And then you had the X-Files, which was just, for a number of years, very, very perfect. You know, and you really got into the whole shtick with it. You know, I got the whole series in Blu-ray behind me. You know, and I need to do a binge watch of those first six years, I think. 5 years at least.
I would say six, maybe even seven. Plus the first movie.
We probably slept on the fact that we didn't mention any UPN shows or, didn't Buffy
WB
and
or CW?
No, I never watched
Buffy. Buffy was pretty much a standalone show. And when they tried to spin off Angel, it ended up on the other network. So Buffy was on WB and Angel was on UPN. And they were on at different times, so you had to change the channel.
Oh, I don't remember that.
And then, of course, WB let Buffy go, and Buffy finished its run on UPN.
Yeah. Then they were back-to-back to Angel at that point, weren't they?
Yes.
I'll tell you what.
For
I missed
Buffy's last
Buffy.
Season, I think.
I missed season 5 of Buffy because living in this area, Buffy was on Channel 50, and Channel 50's tower fell down, and we didn't get Channel 50 like night. Yeah, the tower fell down. Channel 50's TV tower,
and you missed
the WB.
The very best season.
I missed all of season 5, and I didn't get to watch it until it came out on DVD. It was so upsetting.
And it's
damn. You know, I'm going to tell you, that sucks almost as bad as what happened to me. Here I am. I've been a Babylon 5 fan since day fucking one. And suddenly, the local station that was carrying Babylon 5 stopped carrying Babylon 5 5 episodes into season 3. They don't start showing it again until season 1 without ever re-airing season 3. So I'm sitting there. Now, you have to understand, this is 95, 96. This is when you had to go, God, I hope somebody starts syndicating this because they're not going to put this show on VHS beyond those first episodes that they'd already done as kind of a promotional thing. And that's why when the show ended up getting canceled and then brought back, but, you know, TNT said, well, we don't know if we're going to renew it, but we're definitely going to start stripping the episodes. I was like, oh, good. Even if it's coming to an end, I can finally catch up. But, yeah, I was somebody who I had to catch up on the majority of season 3 and then all of season 4 for Babylon 5 because they went and took it off in the middle of season 5 in the middle of season 3 and let me tell you that was not fun.
Well, you're probably wondering why didn't I have cable? Well, right before this all happened with the tower falling down, we were in a new house in a new development, and they weren't wired for cable. So we had a very sophisticated antenna. So we got all our TV off an antenna. And then, like I said, so we were getting Channel 50 from the broadcast tower, not through cable. And then, you know, like I say, 50 lost their tower, and, well, that's where we were. So, you know, bad timing and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. So I think that I think that actually, you know, and it's been 75 minutes, and we like to keep these things around 75 minutes to an hour and a half. I think that pretty much brings this to a close, unless either of you guys have something more to say about that 70s lineup.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, in that case, before I thank you guys and sign off, I want to say that we will be back with another show next week on Breaking Bad. And in 2 weeks, Aaron will be back with me, and we'll be joined by Sammy Giuliano as we explore the TV films of Ingmar Bergman. So that's Breaking Bad next week and the TV work of Ingmar Bergman 2 weeks from tonight. So that's what's coming up on Cathode Ray Mission over the next 2 weeks. So I want to thank everybody out there who's listening for listening. It's greatly appreciated. You're wonderful. And it has been great getting a chance to talk about this. You know, I thought it was a topic worth discussing, you know, the way the TV has developed. But, yeah, so I will say thank you, Alan, and thank you, Aaron. And we can all say good night and sign off here and get back to our families and friends and beds and whatnot. So let's say good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.